Good morning. Today is Wednesday, February the 5th. Joining us this morning, electric car guru and aficionado, Mike Wilson.
Oh, I'm just a beginner, but it is quite a fun and interesting adventure.
All right, zealot. How's that? Does that
work better? Sure. Okay. I don't know. No, I'm not
if
zealot.
If you're not an aficionado yet, you're just a passionate warrior.
An owner and, I would have to say proselytizing. It's good. I recommend everyone check it out.
Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
I hope it's better than last time.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of rough, huh?
Marionette. I know what a marionette is.
Yeah.
Now.
All right.
That's a puppet.
All right, smart guy. Maudlin, pronounced properly. What's the reason an over-sentimental person is said to be maudlin?
Oh, because they're multi-layered.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm thinking of like a geologic term. Things are mottled. It means they have a mixture of various sediments in it. Maybe a mixture of sentiments.
No. Nice try, though. I mean, at least there was a thread there that we could go
with.
I had
a cup of coffee, and that's what you get.
Yeah. The term is a reference to Mary Magdalene. A British pronunciation of Magdalene being maudlin, as in Magdalen College, but it's spelled Magdalene. Mm. Medieval painters represented Mary Magdalene as having a very doleful face, her eyes swollen with weeping.
Huh, yeah. That was...
The layering, though, at least I could follow that thought.
A doleful face?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Doleful. No, that would look like pineapple.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to work.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
That's worse than my jokes.
Yeah, okay, fine. With the onshore wind project kind of settled down, and disappeared, there's the offshore.
Yeah.
Project. Are there any parallels between the two other than harnessing wind energy?
The parallels are the basics of the technology. Fundamentally, it's probably located, actually, even though you wouldn't see it from shore in general. I mean, I think you have to get up to some good altitude to see it because it'd be 20 miles off. It's functionally closer to our energy user resource for us anyway.
Yeah, it's closer to the bay.
Yeah, and then the Monument Ridge area, which is, I think, about 30 miles away. So there's that. It's significantly more expensive, and it's a newer technology, so it has those challenges to it. It has an expandability that makes it a different beast altogether.
Kind of modular?
Well, yeah, in terms of just the resource itself. So when we are talking about the Bear and Monument Ridge area, that was really the closest, most accessible, efficient area to do onshore wind. It was closest to where you can tie into the grid to deliver directly to us. And remember, pretty much all of that wind energy would have been consumed by Humboldt County and would have replaced our fossil fuel use of the natural gas plant, which comes from fracking, much of it. But it's really the ridges behind that are the next, the Rainbow Ridge and the other ridges behind it are kind of the next ridges that could produce wind energy. Not saying that they would or should, but in terms of the resource. Whereas offshore... it's a vast area of wind resource out there, which could produce enough wind energy for export from Humboldt County if this was a project that we did.
Is there
not in the short term, but certainly in the longer term. And we don't have the transmission capacity currently. That would be another $1 billion on top of the added $1 billion that an offshore project has over the cost of an onshore project, but the cost of energy renewables in that case is higher than other renewables. It's still lower than a lot of our fossil fuel sources.
With the need for complete new infrastructure for that,
mm-hmm.
are there many players out there that can do that kind of thing?
I mean, there's.
So even though it's a big price tag, there's a lot of guys that play in that ballpark.
Yes, there is, and it's an expanding market space. And there will be, of course, just like any new technologies, there's going to be some funding from various agencies that will also participate in that. Certainly not to the degree that we fund and support fossil fuel exploration and protectionism through our military and other things, but it will likely, just like any infrastructure of this magnitude, have some play from a governmental perspective in terms of support, because as a technology, it needs to be expanded if we're going to replace fossil fuels with non-carbon producing energy sources.
Is there anything that makes our area unique? The onshore, we had something that was unique.
Yeah.
The fact that this is, you know, 20 miles off the coast, everybody's got 20 miles off the coast, everybody's got Along the coastlines, they've got water. So is there anything that makes us unique in this
equation? Yeah, I would say that our onshore, the things that made it unique actually made it more difficult in terms of its, you know, in terms of the needs for mitigation. Didn't make it impossible necessarily, although, you know, we didn't definitely pass the bar on that. But offshore, the things that make it unique for offshore is the location and the area, and then that we also have a very adjacent harbor next to it, and a harbor that doesn't have a bridge going over the entrance, which is more common than you think along the coast. And when you're assembling these 600-foot high structures, you know, you can't even get them under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right, even the bridge at Coos Bay
and the bridge
may not be quite.
No, not even may not
high
be
enough. Yeah.
Is not high enough. And so, Maverick, there's not a bridge along the coast that is. So you really have to have it be.
So it's either Humboldt or Trinidad?
Well, it's not Trinidad, but it has to be in a location that doesn't have that and has the access for an industrial port facility, and we have that. So those two things make it a very attractive location, the resource and the access to that resource. The things that make it challenging is connecting it to the bigger grid.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept of the offshore wind, I don't know, we call them windmills, wind turbines, wind what? What do we call them? Is there a generic?
I don't know. Some people call them wind farms. Some people call them wind, turbines. Sure.
Okay.
Whatever you want to call them.
With those, what are the environmental concerns? I mean, there's certainly, with the previous administration, there were some set-asides for marine reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough.
Right.
These things, do they float on the surface?
Yeah.
Are they connected down into the bottom? Does it?
Yes to both.
What is known about the infrastructure of these things?
So, to describe them in terms of what we think about windmills or wind turbines, they're quite large, as what was controversial a bit about what we just went through with the Terrigen project. I mean, they'd be up to 600 feet tall, which is very, very
pretty
tall.
Impressive, yeah.
Right. And so in terms of what we're looking at for offshore here, kind of one of the reasons we don't have it already is because we have our continental shelf drops off. It's deep water offshore pretty fast. And most of what you see when you look at wind turbines in the ocean are wind turbines there in shallow waters, and they're basically have a foundation that's in the in the ground underneath the water.
Or in the bedrock.
Yeah, or
under
whatever
the silt
it is.
Or whatever.
Yeah. And so that's what you see, and it's standing there. These would have to be floating because it's too deep. And in floating, you have these very large structures, which are these kind of like tripod of buoys.
Like an oil rig in
yeah, like a,
above
well,
the
and that's
circuit,
the that's
visual?
That's the infrastructure. That's the technology that's being used, is an adaptation of a floating oil rig, basically. And then those are tethered to the bottom of the ocean, is generally how that works. And which is why one of the reasons why not having a bridge at the entrance of Humboldt Bay makes Humboldt Bay a great opportunity for servicing, because you construct these things on these floating, basically giant pontoons, which are, they're huge. And then you stand them up, or you basically build them, and they're 600 foot tall, and then you tug them out into the ocean, and then you tether them to their locations.
Is the mouth of the harbor big enough to allow these things to go through?
Yeah, absolutely. They don't have a lot of draft necessarily. They're not very deep draft.
No, I was just thinking of the width of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They can make it through the harbor. That's not really an issue. Issue for Humboldt Bay in general is just getting the infrastructure to make sure that the cranes can stand on withstand the loads and those sorts of things. So that's kind of the bigger issue for that.
Does the Coastal Commission have? Obviously, you guys would come into play on this.
Oh, yeah. The Coastal Commission would definitely have a play in this, for sure.
Are projects like this more favorably looked upon?
Ooh, I don't know.
Or are there any others on the West Coast?
There aren't. This would be the first if this is what happens. And going to your question about environmental impacts, I mean, the impacts that people are going to look at, for the most part, have to do with impacts to the living things. So the birds, the marine life, those are the things that are going to be impacts. And then also access for fishing, in terms of making sure that fishermen either have access to this, or analyzing what the impacts might be and mitigating for those impacts. And then those will be probably what we're looking at in terms of like the quote unquote controversies of those things, and what I mean is like, everything we do has some controversy. All of it is, based on people's legitimate concerns, and then the concerns that we have for wildlife too. So for birds, and we know that.
Are there a lot of birds 20 miles off the shore?
Not as many.
I would think there's not a lot of food other than the fish.
It's still a concern. And then there's the concern about whales, and there's the concern about other marine life. There's the concern that the sound of the windmills themselves. Well, I think maybe it might sound different underwater. And then even there's some concerns about, the cables themselves putting out some electromagnetic signaling that might have impacts on certain species. But those are the things that have to get looked at. We have to counterbalance that to understanding that we have an ocean that's warming, that's acidifying, from the impacts of burning fossil fuels, which is exactly what we're trying to replace here. And so we have to look at every one of these things on a balance. I think we missed that conversation before.
That's where I was going to get to. It didn't seem as if that one surfaced for those that were in opposition and were expressing concerns about the animal, the wildlife, and things of that nature, that the offset never seemed to be addressed. So
I think it's hard for us as humans, because we see our current status as sort of a neutral position, right? Where that's not really the case when we're talking about climate change. We're heading for a wall. We're heading in a negative direction. Even though it seems like it's sort of just neutral, it's getting worse, and we're heading in that direction. And when we analyze that situation with, say, like the Terrigen project, we didn't really talk about what it replaces, which is our fossil fuel use for electricity. So when we look at the electricity,
did that matter for those who were in opposition?
I think it's hard, again, for humans just to have that perspective, because you would think that if you
were... Yeah, but somebody rings the bell, everybody at least hears it.
Yeah.
So if it was mentioned, at least it would be...
The amount of misinformation surrounding that project was pretty immense, and it was pretty hard to get through all that. But I think that we will need to talk about our current sources more.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism, because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept of these offshore wind turbines, how does the byproduct, the reason that they're the energy, get to shore? Does each one of these have an individual? Are they tie into one big, massive monster thing?
Well, it's not monster, but they are aggregated just like, it's not dissimilar to the onshore. You have a group of windmills or wind turbines, and then the energy produced by them is basically put onto a single or multiple lines that then come together and deliver to an onshore location. In this case, it would most likely be to the existing power facility at King Salmon is the most likely location where that would happen.
So like a big giant conduit with a bunch of lines inside of it?
You keep stretching your arms out conduit.
Well, instead of like a 2-inch drain pipe, are we looking at like a 20-foot diameter?
Well, I'm not an electrical engineer, but I can't imagine it being much bigger than what we see, streaming across lines that we see, hung around on our power structures. So I don't know.
So it wouldn't be a big visual change.
You're not going to see it. It's all underwater.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't see it at all.
And when it comes on shore, it just dovetails in.
Yeah. So
do these things exist anywhere? If Humboldt Bay is the only one on the West Coast that's a potential for this.
The North Sea. So in the North Sea, in Europe, are where the first generation, and maybe now we're into second generation of this technology. And again, it's not focusing on the floating structures. That this is what makes this part new, is that they're on floating structures. And you can, if you're interested in seeing what they look like, you can look up floating wind turbines on the Google there, And I recommend Scotland has been doing a lot of work in this, and you can see places where they are getting assembled in very small ports. They look quite large when they're next to shore, and then they get tugged out to sea.
Mm-hmm. So if Scotland is kind of the cutting edge on this stuff, have they run into any issues?
Well, it's a new technology, so I'm sure there's been issues. But there hasn't been anything that that we're hearing about that's
deal breaker.
Yeah, that's stopping it. I mean, it's really on a forward movement for sure. Again, it's compared to onshore, it's in a corrosive environment. It's an environment that's dynamic. It's moving. It's not a ground. It's like you have waves and energy in that system that is moving in all kinds of different directions. So it does make it accessibility, you have to get there by boat or maybe...
Servicing probably is a little bit more challenging.
Right, and it's more expensive and more challenging, and that will impact the value of, or the cost of it to our customers too. So we have to take that into consideration, and we don't necessarily get the same... property tax base, for instance, the Terrigen project would have produced somewhere in the order of almost $30 million in property tax. Most of that would have gone to our schools, you know, and so we, you know, in not choosing to move forward that project, you know, there's, you know, consequences, or there's, you know, impacts with regards to that. And so, but we do, it will have property tax value onshore where we do these, you know, where the companies are using our onshore facilities to service these areas. So that's,
there'll be a little bit of a kick.
Yeah, I don't know. And it could be pretty significant. And we do have to, you know, make that consideration in terms of like the ancillary businesses and industries that will tee off of the work that's done. Like we've seen in any other time you have something of significance, there's more to it than just the business itself. It's
sure. You know, well, like with the timber industry, when it was more viable, you had guys driving the logging trucks and then those servicing the logging trucks.
Yeah, I'm referencing more like the machine works and the other things like that. And then the infrastructure that supports those then ends up, you know, maybe there's another business like a boat building business or this business or that that actually can tee off of the infrastructure that's created from those harbor industries. And so that's a value for sure economically to Humboldt County.
What is Scotland's environmental laws like compared to California? Because it's still in California waters, right?
Well,
20 miles off, or is that U.S. waters?
Well, Scotland has some pretty strict environmental rules and laws. I'm having visited there a few years ago and having an associate of mine, actually part, you know, someone I know there that's actually, you know, a biologist and part of their wildlife agency there. And we've talked a lot about that. You know, they do have... they don't have the same, you know, vastness and diversity of California in terms of its resources, but they certainly have very significant resources, and they have taken wind on in a way that few other places have. And in terms of, I believe that if they haven't just recently reached, they are predicted to reach very soon a full, you know, 100% renewable electrical, you know, electricity.
So it's working out for them.
Yeah, and they're diving in deep with that because they have to. I mean, it's really part of, you know, the Scottish ethos is a very one of independence, right? And so is Humboldt County, I would say. And so they've taken that on very seriously, and they are very independent. Energy-wise, Humboldt County, not so independent. We're dependent on frack natural gas for half of our electricity. There's not, even though we talk about moving into solar to try and do that, that's a, you know, still a billion, more than $1 billion out, and more than 2,000 acres of solar panels to be installed to get even halfway there. So that's, you know, many decades away from using that technology, although we should be moving in that direction too. We have to do it all. And so part of our energy independence comes from our biomass plants. So we have that. We are not independent in terms of our fuels for our transportation, right? This is all shipped in. Matter of fact, we're like Scotland in a lot of ways, or parts of Scotland, and we're in terms of it's coming in by barge. Like we have basically an island economy when you talk about fossil fuels, and electrification of vehicles, which we talked about a little bit before, is one way. If we're going to be able to produce our own energy with electricity, then we can produce our own transportation energy from that same electricity. And so hopefully we'll be moving in that direction for both our economic benefit, but also just our independence and resilience as a community.
KINS, News and Information Time is, well, 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, with the offshore wind turbines, kind of in the area close to the triple plate junction.
Sure.
Certainly in earthquake territory. Does that add a little twist to this, or is it really not much of a factor because they're floating on the surface? The anchors may have just be designed slightly differently.
Yeah, I don't. I can't. I mean, I can't imagine how that would be so significant in. Considering the size that they are and considering that they're tethered to the bottom.
Yeah, maybe the scale is large
and they're,
enough.
You know, when you're offshore that much, you know, so the tether bounces up and down maybe a little bit, but there's generally probably slack in that tether. I can't imagine this, you know, moving that much. You know, when an earthquake moves and that shaking happens, it's...
Yeah, if it moves 4 or 5 feet, that's a big deal.
That's huge. Yeah, that's just...
Out there, it may not be that much.
That's beyond. Yeah. I mean, that's... just. It doesn't really move that much. And then I would say probably the biggest impact or the biggest risk would be to onshore infrastructure, which would already be existing. And so I don't really feel like that's probably one of the biggest risks that we have.
You mentioned the onshore infrastructure. What kind of timeline, if these things are getting put out there, how much time would it be needed to put the infrastructure in play to handle all this additional power that's coming in?
Well, I mean, for the first segment or wave of this type of technology offshore, and if it's to be, you know, connected directly to the power plant facility and the transmission capacity at the power plant, well, then you basically could grow up to its capacity, and in which case you're replacing that source of energy and basically shutting it down. It's a replacement.
So it's just an exchange.
Right, which is basically what the Terrigen project would have done for the most part, would be to replace that fuel source, because that is, a natural gas fuel source for that's producing electricity. We're burning fossil fuels for our electricity now through that plant. And this technology would replace that.
Well, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about this as time marches on.
And more about my electric car.
That's right. To be continued.
That's right.
See everybody tomorrow.